Chapter 12, A Gloffysome Encounter. George stood fairly still, muddling with fear, trying to shove himself against the rummel of stains at his back so that he wouldn't be seen. His senses were sharp, trying to scream what he could, listening hard for the voices. Then they spoke again. "Just down there, I'm sure of it," one of them said. "A light of some kind, down towards the cliff." "I think all the sea air is getting to you, Carl. You're imagining things, dithering," Malcolm replied. "Shut up, I know what I saw," said Carl. "Come on, I'm going for a look." George was just puppering with fear. Where as he was ever felt in his life, he didn't ken whether to run or bite where he was. He couldn't move a muscle. He had his een shut for what might have been 20 seconds, but felt a lot langer. When he opened them again, he could just make out the ship of twa men walking down over for the ha, getting nearer and nearer. Then each of them put on a blankie and shone it in front of them. He wanted to roar out, but somehow managed to bide quiet. He kent he had to move, or they would fin him in less than a minute. He ogled round the side of the watch tower, hoping there were nae loose stains that would make a noise when he set his foot up with them, and managed to win round the far side of that our muckle butter. He chanced to scout over his shoulder and saw they were mere as halfway to the watch tower already, gaining on him fast. He could just scream the edge of the banks, and with another look ahunt them, told himself he just had to make it afore they went down to where he was. He realised it wasna a case of haeing a nyoch time, for he had nae option but to ging. With his heart beating fast and nearly greeting him with fear, he took a breath and set off upon his hookers, trying to bide low but keep as muckle wye upon him as he could. He could hear the twa men speaking, and out of the corner of his een he saw the light feather blankie sweeping the ground. He didna dare look ahunt to see foo far away they were. Their beam of light shone up at the bank's brew, just where he was about to ging over, cutting him off in his tracks. He lay down flat up at the ground, hauling the rucksack close to him, wishing he could climb inside it. The light strafed round about him and then back to the bank's brew. Looking to the ha, he saw that the main was nae distance from him, and there were nae why he would hae time to get down over the brow without being seen. He buried his head to the rucksack as far as he could and shut his een. The nearest man was even closer now. He could hear his feet kicking through the floss, and he heard him hoarsting. He talked that if he came any closer, he would hear his heart hammering away, and he would see him. George opened his een and turned his head peery-wise to the side. The man was only about 6 feet from him, walking slowly along, sheening his blankie from side to side. He nearly yelked with fear, but could hardly breathe, let alone roar, as he watched the silhouette get nearer and nearer. He could make out the birds up at the man's face. He was that near, and he could see his jacket and breeks as clear as could be. He stopped at that close that George could have reckoned out and touched his foot. Ah, he could see the man knew was his feet, for he couldn't turn his head for fear of being seen. The voice of Malcolm came from further away. "Anything there?" he asked.
"No, don't see anything,"
Carl replied, our close for comfort.
"Could have been a sheep or something you saw. I never saw anything,"
Malcolm said, sounding a pretty bit closer as he waggled down to meet Carl.
"A sheep with a torch, Malcolm? I thought it could have been those blasted kids again that were here the other day. I suppose it could have been the moon shining off something,"
Carl added. The light of his torch picked out Malcolm as he got nearer to him.
"Those kids," Malcolm gasped. "They're hardly going to be up here at 1 in the morning. They'll be at that dance in the hall like everybody else in the village. What would they be looking for? They can't know anything about the tunnel, let alone what's in it. Come on, let's get back to the house. We have to get down that tunnel ourselves."
George watched Carl's muckle feet turn slowly around to face the tither way and saw the light sheening up at the watch tower. Then Carl started walking away from him. George sank his head into the rucksack again, hardly believing that he wasn't been seen. And he could hardly believe either what he was just heard. What could it all mean? George watched the men walk back to the hard, then slowly went to his foot. He keep it low down and made for the bank's brew, the rucksack upon his back.
As he drappit doon the pretty now that led to the trenkie, he kent he was out of sight of the ha. So he stood his length and moved a piece quicker, being careful no to trip and ging heidi-cra doon out the banks. The headmaster was the steepest, and he kind of half fell, half ran doon over the rocks afore jumping doon onto the shingle. The doose o' him landing again, Robbie and Kirsty a clough. "For heaven's sake, George, where's the been? What took thee so long?" Robbie asked as he came closer. He could see with the look upon George's face that he had news. He was pecking and could hardly speak, the excitement and fear coming up in him. He stood twa fold with his hands upon his knees, trying to breathe and speak at the same time. "Phew," he said, gathering his breath. "You'll never guess what I'm just seen and heard," he carried on, still pecking. "What, George, what's I do up yonder?" Kirsty asked. "Who's been gained that lang we took those fan?" George hardly kent quite the start. "Listen," he began, "I went to the watch tour to get my rucksack, and just as I was about to come back down, I heard twa voices and a van door shutting. It was young Carl and Malcolm again." Kirsty get put yalk and put her hand over her mouth, both with a glove, and to stop the sound. "Nah," Robbie said, "they were up yonder we know. What did you do?" He could tell that George wasn't making it up. "Well," George got on, "I was going to try and win back down here, but they were seeing the blunkie and came down to see what it was. I was that feared and kent I wouldn't make it back that I just had to lie down upon the ground and wait." He closed his een, trying not to think about foo near Carl was gotten them. "And they came down close to me," he said, shaking his head. "That close, I canna believe they didn't see me." "Foo near were they today?" Robbie asked. "Did they get as far down as the watch tour?" George looked at him, pat his hair out and touched his shoulder with his knife. "That's foo close Carl was to me." Kirsty pat her hand over her mouth again. Robbie's een widened as he tried to picture the scene and what it man had been lit. "Gee whiz," he said, "George, that's unbelievable. Was the fair? What, why did he no see thee?" "I dunna ken," George said. "It man had just been where I was lying, and with him sheening a blinkie, his een wouldn't have been used to the dark. He nearly tripped over me." "Say, what happened after that?" Kirsty asked. "Foo lang was he there?" "Until the other crather Malcolm walked down to where he was, then they wandered back up to the ha. I could hear them speaking, and they seemed to think that we might be here." "What did they say?" Robbie asked. "Why did they think we would be here? What is it they're after?" "Well, one of them was worried that we were looking for the tunnel, or whatever was inside it. That was just before they set off up to the ha." "The tunnel?" Robbie sounded surprised. "Is that what they said? George, come do and look at this cave of us." Kirsty snuck it on the blankie. "Is this the size of it?" George asked, looking about in disbelief. "Nothing could be hiding in here." "That's what we thought," Robbie said, "till Kirsty saw this." He was pointing up the roof of the cave while she was sheening the light. "See, Stu?" George stood gannin' up where the light was maybe 10 feet above them. It looked like a drill was bored a great muckle hole in the roof of the cave, then just vanished up the way in the blackness. Nah, George said, fairly amazed. "Yon man be war Archie Hunter good. Then they why either?" "That's what we were thinking," said Robbie. "If he can be see, and I canna see what either why he would have come, and this is the doose cave he mentions in the poem, then this man be hit, and this man be what the man was looking for too." The three of them were still looking up at the hole of the roof of the cave when George had a thought. "Say, if this is what the man is looking for," he said, turning to Robbie and Kirsty, "then why did they gang back up to the ha to look for a tunnel?" "I took the man be looking in the wrong place," Robbie said, "for this is clearly..." Suddenly he was interrupted by the sprags of Kirsty. "The man be a tunnel that runs between here and the ha," she shouted, "and the men kind about one end out and we kind about the tither." Three of them looked at one another, then up at the black hole of the roof of the cave, then back at one another again. They all started speaking at once, everything suddenly making perfect sense. "Oh boy, that's right," Robbie said, hardly can tell himself. "That is to be what it is. Yeah, it is to be," George got on. "For when they walked away from where I was, they kent where they were gone. they're looking for the other end of the tunnel. And didn't Archie say the poem something about leaving a goodock for the laird to finn? Kirsty said. Well, maybe had said what was hoided as well and where it was. The twa boys agreed with her right away, and they were a' wondering who the men could have kent about the goodock in the first place and what it was they were now looking for. Well, at least we ken that isna wild goose chase were on after her, Robbie said. Come on, try and get in this tunnel. George, let's get the leather out of the boat. Kirsty, grip yon collar up, for we might need it. Not one of them thought for a minute that their folk might be worried sick about them. They were haeing the adventure of their lives.